plowman, dig my earth. We bring you All Along the Watchtower, which is appropriate in some ways for the theme of this hour, but also Jimi Hendrix's song. On this day in 1967, the Monkees, a rock group that was popular back in the day with teenagers, began a 29-day tour with Jimi Hendrix Experience backing them up as a support act. Well, Hendrix was dropped after six shows because they said his stuff was inappropriate for teeny boppers. So we thought we'd honor our boy Jimi with his song right now. So we come back now to our discussion. And we are going to look at the immigration crisis on our border, a very serious issue. We are joined by Stephen Shea, who is a news blogger at TheNation.com, has been writing about this a great deal to start off our conversation. And Stephen, welcome to the Mark Steiner Show. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
And you all can join me here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. You can also tweet us at Mark Steiner. Go on to our Facebook page, 410-319-8888. So, Stephen, you've been writing some really interesting things in The Nation. This is, I think, trying to give a sense of the horrendous conditions and what's happening to these children on the border. The unbelievable numbers of 49,000, almost 50,000 kids, children, since October, coming to the U.S. borders. So give us a sense of what you're seeing on the ground there.
So I actually haven't been on the ground there myself. As a blogger, I compile news reports. But what other people have been seeing on the ground let's talk about the... These children are going through many phases, of stark conditions, starting from the violence in their home countries, through the perilous journey, through Central America and Mexico, all the way to the point where they get to the border and they're detained by Border Patrol, and they are shipped into, detention facilities, which, as we've seen from news reports, are of extremely questionable conditions, to say the least.
So, Stephen, one of the things that you've written about is on the border here. There's been all these issues with U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials and the security. I mean, the National Public Radio did a whole series on what's going on the border, and the Border Patrol would not respond to them nor talk to NPR for this series. But you also write about all these allegations of physical and sexual abuse of these children who are caught by the Border Patrol. What do you know and what don't you know?
Sure. So that's one of the concerns that a lot of immigrant rights groups have right now is that Border Patrol is overseeing some of these facilities that are taking in these unaccompanied children. And the problem with that is Border Patrol, it's mainly a law enforcement agency and one that has that doesn't have a pretty record when it comes to human rights. So that report was taken from an ACLU investigation into widespread child abuse allegations by Border Patrol of children. So anything from verbal abuse to physical or sexual abuse. Now, to be clear, these allegations weren't taken from this current wave of unaccompanied children, but they were gathered over, I think, last year. But it does raise questions about who is overseeing, the current crisis and who is handling the children and what type of training, they're undergoing.
Because these kids, once they're in, by law, are supposed to then be transferred to Health and Human Services for evaluation, for treatment, while they're figuring out what to do with these kids. And that's not happening very rapidly.
Right. By law, they're required within 72 hours to transfer the kids to what's called the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which is within the Department of Health and Human Services. And, there have been a lot of questions raised as to whether or not our border officials are meeting that obligation. There are questions as to whether or not the Obama administration might roll back that protection, that protection being the direct transfer to the Department of Health and Human Services, which is part of a law, an anti-trafficking law, that's passed under Bush Jr. If that law is taken back, rolled back, then the only thing that's going to be protecting these kids from deportation is a screening interview, a short screening interview that they do with Border Patrol shortly after arriving in the country, you know, shaken.
Right, because what I've been reading is that President Obama and the administration would like it to be under the aegis of the Border Patrol so this can be handled quickly and not be drawn out, which would happen with the Health and Human Services taking over the children.
That's right.
So, and one of the things I read in the article, I'd like to, I don't know if you can talk a bit more about this one piece you wrote, but I was really interested in this and like to know more. You said that you wrote that a report of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees found that many unaccompanied children apprehended at the U.S.-Mexican border, quote, may well be in need of international protection, unquote, after they've interviewed the High Commissioner's group interviewed 402 kids, finding 58% of them left the country after suffering or being threatened with gang violence, sexual abuse, and exploitation by the smuggling industry. So what more detail can you give us?
Sure. So the UNHCR really does have, you know, the definitive report, you know, of, I guess, the impetus of this crisis, and that is the violence that it's so important to emphasize. You know, the violence that these children are facing in their home countries, right? So the UNHCR, they did interviews with some 400 kids that have crossed the border, and, you know, they've been on top of this crisis. And what they found is some at least 60% qualify for some kind of international protection. And they give some examples of the types of situations, circumstances that the children are fleeing from. So, I mean, you have, Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, the countries where most of these kids are coming from. As you know, they're plagued by gang violence and drug cartels. And what you have is you have gangs intimidating children to join or else face, you know, physical assault or even murder. You have young girls that are being taken in as, you know, sex slaves, kidnappings, all kinds of horrible things. You know, just to paint a picture of what these kids are escaping from. And you can find that on the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. You can find the report on their website. It really lays out in detail some of the circumstances that these kids are escaping.
I think that I guess one very quick thing before we have to go and move on to our next segment, Stephen Shea, is that when we write that 47,000 unaccompanied children have been apprehended at the border since October the 1st, a huge number, a huge jump by, you say, more than 1,000% since 2009. Give us just a quick sense of the analysis of why people are thinking there's been this huge jump. The factors that have caused this huge jump in young people at the borders, unaccompanied.
Sure, yeah. You know, there's been talks that that as police crack down on some of the drug activity that's happening in Mexico, that a lot of that cartel activity is flowing into Central America. So, I mean, there's always been, you know, drug trafficking and gang activity in Central America, but it is really just heightened in recent years. So yeah, that helps to explain the current crisis.
Well, I appreciate all the reporting and blogging you're doing on this, Stephen Shea, who is a news blogger at TheNation.com. We look forward to talking to you again and following what you've been writing.
Thank you, Mark, for having me.
Good to have you with us. Stephen Shea from The Nation magazine. We're going to take a brief break, and we'll be joined by our panel to really discuss in detail what this new immigration crisis means and what we should be doing about it, why it's happening, and some of the things we're not always seeing in the headlines of the news. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Do not leave us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and good to have you all here with us as we continue our conversation about immigration at the U.S. border and what is happening, why almost 50,000 children had attempted to come into this country since October of last year. And if 47,000 kids have been apprehended by the Border Patrol, how many thousands have gotten through beyond that? What is the real size of this, and what is going on? We are joined on the phone by Megan La Mamita Mato Ortiz, who is a freelance journalist based in Los Angeles, who's been writing about immigration for 10 years. And Megan, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Genevieve Wood is with us. She's senior contributor to the Daily Signal. She advances policy priorities of the Heritage Foundation, a senior contributor to the Foundry. Genevieve, good to have you with us.
Good to be on.
And Luis Larin is with us, who is leadership organizer for United Workers here in Baltimore, Maryland. He himself is from Guatemala. And Luis, welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
And please join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can also log on to our Facebook pages and tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. What do you think about this crisis on our borders? What do you think should be done about it? We want to hear your thoughts and ideas. So please do join us here now. But let's begin our conversation. So this, I think we've not seen a crisis like this in terms of young people under 18 years old kind of storming through the borders and fleeing their countries in Central America for the most part, in the, what we call the isthmus. And we'll get into the nuance of all this and what the government is doing and not doing and why this is happening. But I think, Genevieve Wood, you would be fair to say this is not something we've seen before.
Well, certainly not at this level. I mean, yes, have children come from Central American countries and other countries before? Yes, that's true, but not near the numbers that we have seen, specifically this year, but really even starting last year. The surge of, you know, now we're expecting it's possible that it could be up to 90,000 that we actually see come across this year if things don't change, if the current numbers, the current influx of those coming across stays where it is today, we could be looking at 90,000 unaccompanied children.
That's a distinct possibility. So, Megan, please jump in on that.
Yeah, I think definitely there has been, a much higher number seen in the last few months. And I think what we need to talk about when we talk about those numbers is not be so caught up in the fear of the numbers, but talk about what that really means and in terms of the why. For example, let's talk about the gang violence. Let's talk about the growth of drug cartels. Let's talk about trade policies on the part of the United States that has also decimated the economy in Central America.
Well, I mean, let's kind of wrestle with some of this. I mean, one of the things that the one of the writers who joined us here earlier in the program said before we came into this discussion was, and I didn't know about this till I read this article, and what effect this has or doesn't have on this debate and what our sense of it is that the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees did a study on these unaccompanied children, interviewing them, and found that in their study, the 58% fled their countries because of suffering threatened with gang violence, sexual abuse, or exploitation by the smuggling industry. And that's what caused almost 60% of these kids to kind of flee their homelands to here. I think nobody in their right mind otherwise would walk through the desert. So the question is, what does that mean for us as Americans, Genevieve? How do we respond to it?
Well, look, I don't think there's any doubt that there's a number of things that contribute to this debate and contribute to why people choose to come here. But drug violence is not new in this area. Poverty is not new in this area. So even if some of those things have accelerated somewhat, I think that's debatable. I think, frankly, the number one reason we've seen this acceleration is because there's a belief in those countries that the laws in the United States have changed, and that if they are able to enter this country, even if it's illegally, once they get in, they're going to be given the opportunity to stay. And the truth is, the laws in this country have changed somewhat. In 2012, President Obama put forth, through executive action, a delayed deportment for children, not of all ages and not for everyone, but a large majority of children who came here before 2007. Word got back that if you get in as a child, you're going to be able to stay. And if you look at when the surge started taking place, it really was post-2012 that you saw this. So I think the laws and the policies in this country have as much to do with this, and frankly more than almost anything that's happening there, as hard as it is But the reality is, it's been a tough place in Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador for a number of years, not just recently. Now, could we be doing better foreign policy and working with these governments to fight the drug cartels? Absolutely. There's no doubt that they are involved in some of what we're seeing. They're getting paid to smuggle many of these children and families to the United States. So they're making money off of this. And then additionally, because they've been so overtaken with this, it takes their eye off the ball in some cases of fighting the drug cartel that's trying to get across the Texas-Mexican border. So that kind of distraction is helpful to the drug smugglers, and I think they're playing a big role in all of this.
Luis, we haven't heard from you. Go ahead, Megan, then we'll go right to Luis.
Yes, thank you. I just want to challenge a little bit of what Genevieve said, because, you know, I've been reading as this latest group of unaccompanied minors has been coming in and reading lots of the studies that have been coming out about who these children are and why they're coming here. And the majority of these kids are not coming here because they're expecting a free ride, or they're expecting to be made legal as soon as they cross the border. And so, I mean, that's just sort of this message that keeps getting pumped out, that because of policy changes, that's why they're coming and that's why parents are sending them. And studies show that that's actually not the case. Second, you know, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, which Genevieve also talked about, which was an executive action by President Obama, really helps a small amount of people, of young people who have been in the United States for 10 years or more, who have gone to school here, who have jobs here, who have joined the military here, something that clearly these young people who are coming over the border currently are not eligible for in any way, shape, or form.
And just to be clear, I mean, because I think the laws got very complex here in the last 10 years in America. And I'll ask Luis this, and I'll go right to Genevieve before we take a break and go to our first caller at 410-319-8888. President George Bush, who many people in the conservative world attacked for his not being vociferous enough against immigration, it was his law in 2008 that said that if children come through, they have to have a Health and Human Services hearing before being deported. It's President Obama who seems to want to have the Border Control make the decision, Border Patrol make the decision, so the kids can be deported more quickly.
That's correct.
Luis, you have a thought?
Well, I think we need to, when we talk about the politics and that the U.S. has been used for countries like Latin America, we also need to remember a lot of history. Poverty and violence is not something new in our countries at all. But a lot of that poverty and a lot of that violence started years and years ago with the support of the U.S. government that leave our countries bleeding in a really, really bad way. And we need to remember that, too. It's not that simple. It's way more complicated than just saying that because the laws that changed in the U.S. during the last 2 years have the impact that we are talking about with so much immigration. The reality is that you are having more people in these countries that are in poverty, and our countries are cannot compete with the U.S. and you have free trade agreements that we are not in the position to compete with.
So we have to take a very brief break here. It's time for a break, I think. And so we'll take a break. Genevieve, I'll let you come back. So I know you can only stay at a quarter of. I want you to you can respond to the whole issue around President Bush. I also want to talk about what we should do and then talk a bit about what is behind this and what's going on and how we should respond as a nation. 410-319-8888. Bruce is our first caller up. We'll get to that call as well. And we're going out with Bill Withers and Lean On Me, that started its run at number one on this day in 1972. Bill Withers, Lean On Me.
Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody.
I'm Mark Steiner, and that's Led Zeppelin. Houses of the Holy, which was released on this day. The song itself called Over the Hills and Far Away. The album was released on this day in 1973. We are talking about the immigration struggles facing America right now. We are joined by Luis Loren here in the studio, leadership organizer for the United Workers, Megan La Mamita Mala Ortiz, who is freelance journalist based in L.A., who's been writing about immigration for the last 10 years. Genevieve Wood is a senior contributor to the Daily Signal, and she advances public policy priorities for the Heritage Foundation as senior contributor to the Foundry. And you at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. Before we go to the phone, Bruce and Derek are our first two callers. Let's go to Bruce first, and then I have a very question about how we define what's going on and what should America's response be, which really haven't gotten to the heart of that yet. 410-319-8888. Bruce, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
So, obviously, it is a complicated problem, and there is a lot of crime. El Salvador, I thought I heard a fact where El Salvador has one of the highest rates of homicides in the world. So that contributes, but also, let's be realist. Let's tell it the way it is. There's been a steady rise of illegal immigration by adults for the last couple of decades, and the truth is our government didn't effectively deal with enforcing the laws at the border, law enforcement, ICE, local sheriffs. The bottom line is they're not just overwhelmed by children, with the children coming through here, and they're overwhelmed with adults are coming here because people haven't dealt with it correctly. And Barack Obama, our president, and a lot of political leaders kept talking about amnesty and how important we need immigration and how important that definitely contributes to why they're coming here, for opportunity. And it's even the problem with enforcement in the interior states. When states like Maryland, the General Assembly, the legislature, decides to give not amnesty, but they're going to give driver's license to people that aren't citizens and education for people that aren't residents of the state or residents of the country. What you do is, you're not going to like this, put some units of the National Guard there to help out so the ICE officials aren't dealing with being babysitters for children. And a lot of those are 14 to 18. They're adolescents. They're not children and teenagers. So you put units of the National Guard to help out with local law enforcement, Homeland Security.
Okay. Bruce, I appreciate the call. I would think that teenagers are children, but by any measure, they're still kids. But let's deal with some of the issues here that directly. And I think before we go to Derek, our next caller up, I want to ask you about what we're looking at here. I mean, how the government should respond. We heard earlier what Bruce said, but I just want to be clear about the politics for a moment. I understand the need for us kind of on the conservative end to lay this at a Barack Obama's doorstep. But the reality is that whether it's Barack Obama or President Bush who tried to figure a way to compromise on immigration, or Ronald Reagan, who was the first president of the United States of America to really push for amnesty and allow people to have citizenship, this is not a Republican or Democrat thing. We want to make it that way. It's a much more complex thing than that. I want to kind of figure out what your responses are to what to do now about these kids on the border who are coming through. What do you do with 47,000 kids, or probably more than that, because some have gotten through that have not been apprehended by Border Patrol? Is this a refugee crisis, as the United Nations says, or is it something different? And how should the United States of America respond to what's going on? And let me go again, once again, to Genevieve, let you begin this, and we'll go over to Megan and then back over here in the studio and back to the phones. Genevieve?
Did we lose her?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did we lose Genevieve? You back?
I'm back.
I'm sorry. So we lost you.
Okay.
I'm talking to you and you weren't even there. So, sorry about that.
That happened.
So what I said very briefly, quickly was, that's beyond Democrat and Republican. I mean, we had President Reagan who wanted to give amnesty, Bush who was trying to find a compromise, and people can disagree with Obama's policies or not, but in some ways he might be trying to be more stringent than George Bush was, even around immigration. But beyond Democrat and Republican, the question is, what do you do about this present crisis on the border with tens of thousands of people under the age of 18 hitting the border? The United Nations says it's a refugee crisis. Is it? If it's not, then what is it, and how does the United States respond? And I was throwing that out to you first, because I know you only have like 10 minutes or so with us.
Sure. No, have it. So I actually went down to the border, Mark, to McAllen about 2.5 weeks ago, and to a person that I talked to, whether it was a Border Patrol agent, U.S. Customs Border Patrol agents, whether it's the Texas Department of Public Safety, they all said the only way that we're going to be able to turn this tide is if we quickly start sending people back to their home countries. And the message gets out that you can make this trek, and if you get through, you're not going to be able to stay. Because the reality is, it doesn't matter, you know, what the law that President Obama signed as an executive action. Yes, it's true, it was only for those who came here before 2007. But the reality is, the message in these countries is very, the one they've got is very different, that if they get in, they believe they can stay. And the truth is, that's exactly what's happening right now. We're not sending these folks home. And we can say it's for this reason or for that, but until we make it faster, until we make it very clear this is not the way to come to the United States, if you do come this way, you're going to be sent home, people are going to continue to flood in. And that wasn't, you know, Republican border agents I was talking to. That was every single border agent, every single member of the Public Safety Department who's dealing with this day in and day out. That's what they firmly believe, and I believe that's the case. That's the only way we can change it. Then there's other issues we have with our immigration system we absolutely need to address. But to specifically talk about the crisis we're having right now, I think that's what we have to do.
So let me go back here to Megan. And the question originally was, this is taking Republicans and Democrats outside of it in the debates over the nuances and the power of immigration policy. The UN says this is a refugee crisis. Can we define it as that? If it is, then what do we do?
Yes, it actually is a refugee crisis. And I think actually, you know, if we even stop looking at just the children that are coming in, there's also, you know, been a large number of adults who have been trying to come in from Central America because of the violence, because of the historic poverty, and the impact that public policy has had in Central America. And most of those people are turned back, actually, statistically, despite a lot of hype about sort of this revolving asylum door. I think something that I haven't heard is that lots of these young people have relatives already in the United States, be it parents or other relatives. I think a high priority would be finding those families and placing these children with those families under some sort of protective custody until their legal status is worked out, and that means affording these young people attorneys. I think, you know, when Obama made the announcement last week that he was putting $2 billion to give these young people attorneys and to put more judges on, I think it's important to note that that was a move to have the deportations expedited. It's not a move to have these children stay longer. So I think that's just something that needs to be remembered. So I think first is putting these families together, if there are families intact that they can be put with here in the United States. And if not, there, you know, because of immigration policies, about 5,000 children have been put into foster care because of deportations in the United States. If we can put 5,000 children already in the United States in foster care because of deportations, we need to be able to find some sort of foster care situation, some sort of nonprofit situation for these young people here until we can work out their asylum status if they are indeed eligible for that.
And you're talking about foster care because the parents have been deported, so the kids are in foster care.
Correct.
Right. That's I'll be clear so people understand what you meant. So, Genevieve, before we turn back to Luis, I'd like you to be able to respond. I'm trying to give you all the time since you have to leave early.
Sure. Well, I think one of the concerns that I think many Americans have is just how not in control we are of our own, not only our own border, but kind of what's going on with immigration. I mean, it's true that many of these children coming across, they do already have family here. They do have parents who are living here. But many of their parents and family that are living in the U.S., are living here illegally. And so it's like, you know, basically the idea is let's just bring the children in who now are also illegal, place them with family members who in many cases are illegal, and then they're told that within a certain amount of time they're supposed to go report to the local immigration authorities and begin the process of deciding should they be deported. When the reality is the majority of them, again, the numbers speak for themselves, the majority of those children and those families never show up for those to begin that process of deportation, and so everybody ends up staying in the United States. And so when people question, well, how do we end up with 11 or 12 million people living here illegally, living in the shadows, it's partially because of things like this. Now, this is obviously accelerated and is making the problem worse, but we don't have control of who's entering this country, who is staying. And that's not good for America. It's not going to keep us being the land of opportunity that so many people want to come here and be a part of. And ultimately, it won't be good for those who are trying to come across, because the truth is, if we don't have a strong economy, if they are not given the skills to assimilate and to become a part of a larger American culture, they're not going to realize the American dream. They will get stuck, I would believe, in government programs and social services, which is, I don't believe, is why many of them are coming, but I think it's the reality of what will happen. We need to have an orderly process by which people come to this country and either get some form of legal status or become citizens. It should not just be de facto that if you get in, you're allowed to stay, and that's what has been happening in recent years.
Let me go to the phones here and come right back to our guests and get some final thoughts from Genevieve before she has to leave and let Megan respond and Louise come back to the conversation. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Derek in Baltimore, you're on the air.
I'm sorry, this is Gary. Am I on the air?
If your name is, if you, yes, you must be Gary,
okay,
and not Derek.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
They got the name wrong. Okay.
Okay.
anyway, I'm Gary, Mark, and first of all, like, your stock continues to go way through the roof. You know, I just made a few notes while I was listening to the people, and I just put the word citizens with question marks. And, you know, when the first Indians saw whites getting off of boats 500 or so years ago, you know, we have to ask, if you want to put it in the form of a joke, you know, it's like, hey, they look like undocumented folks coming over here, you know? And Arundhati Roy, recently I read a quote of hers, and she talked about the breath of a new world. And Howard Zinn talked about there's no such thing as an illegal human being. And in my own thinking, I think we must become more and more planetary citizens and stop being so short-sighted and short-stroking and half-stepping. You know, we have to be like Carlos Santana said, you know, you talk about your country. There's really no such thing for me, the whole world. The whole world is one big family. And that's from, you know, since you like to play music, that's from off of Borboleta. It's the song Give and Take.
Okay.
And, you know, we have to remember that the Global South pays for the Global North, and over half the world's population lives on less than $2 a day. This must be part of our mantra, and I'll take your comments off the air.
All right. Thank you so much. Genevieve, let me let you jump in first, and then Louise. Well, we have to leave.
You know, Mark, I think like this. This crisis is beyond just refugees or anything. This is a humanitarian, political, and economic crisis, and that's what we need also to think and talk about. Like, you can put all the laws that you want in the U.S. You can enforce them. You can put a wall. You can do whatever you want. But when people are in desperation in these countries, they will do whatever they need to do to try to survive. And we are talking about like how like. If we are really attacking the root of the problem, how those countries or countries that are living in extreme poverty, and how the economy can be more balanced, because we end up having this very unequal situation where nobody wants to leave their families. Nobody wants to separate from their families. I mean, nobody wants. But when you decide to put your life in the line just to make sure that to try to have a better life for your families, is when you get to the point of desperation, and I think that's also the other thing that we need to see, like how the politics that the U.S. Put into this country, what the role that the U.S. Government play on to create a lot of poverty in these countries, and how we can really have a more balanced economy. At the end of the day, this is a global situation. This is not just a group of people in Central America moving to the U.S. If you see in Europe, there is also immigration in Europe. I mean, everyone is trying to survive, and we need to remember that. We need to see a little bit beyond just one thing or other. We need to see like how the economy, it is shrinking every single person. It is affecting people's lives, and people need to make decisions where they need to put even their lives in risk to try to survive.
So, Genevieve, let me ask you, I know you have to run here at 10:45 and you're over time now. Do you want to have a final thought before you roll?
Well, I would compliment the comments just made, that I do think there is a stronger role that the United States could play from a foreign policy standpoint, that this is not just an immigration issue that we have to deal with once people cross the border. We should be looking to how we can help other countries, whether it's fighting the drug traffickers and cartels that create violence in these countries, and there's no doubt that that's going on in Central America, to how can we help them have more stable governments and better economies. I think those are things that we can definitely put more energies to, and not just President Obama, but every administration, to ensure that people there are having more opportunities so they don't feel the need to flood here. That said, I don't know that we'll ever be able to do that to the point that people are not going to want to come to America. Because no matter what you ask people around the world where they would like to come, the majority, or the plurality, I should say, of those asked, if they were able to immigrate, where would they go? They would say they would want to come here. That's a great thing that we have, and we should be trying to look at laws that allow us to accept as many people as we can without overtaking the country and overtaking our economy. We have to always have that balance if we want to remain the place that people truly want to come. Thank you for having me on.
Genevieve Wood, I appreciate you taking your time with us today. I look forward to having you on for a longer time next time.
Thank you.
Senior contributor for Daily Signal. Let me get a call in here, and then I'm going to turn right back to Megan for thoughts on this. 410-319-8888. And Reyna Romero Brown, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Reyna.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for calling.
I'm Salvadoran, and I'm mixed with other Native American people. I got to say that I have 2 points. The Reagan administration had a lot of guns and ammunition, tanks, landmines, M-16s, M-17s, delivered for years to Salvador and Nicaragua. Those guns were never cleaned up, and the safety of Central America is the price we're paying. No one feels safe over there because everyone's getting threats for your life. So it's pretty bad. Princess Diana wanted to clean the landmines all over the world. This is not just a Central American problem. Landmines are left behind in people's backyards, in schools. This is a daily living horror story for them. And the U.S. responsible for leaving it behind. My thinking is that the U.S. has to take responsibility. The military has to get there and clean up their mess that they left behind. You know, there's a lot of that left behind. The reality is that it's still there, and the problem's going to continue till it all gets cleaned and managed.
I know. I appreciate the call and the thoughts and your personal experiences and all of this. And I just wanted to ask Megan to come back in here to kind of respond to what you heard Rainier saying and what Genevieve said earlier. And I'm curious, I mean, how do we design a policy in America that addresses what we're seeing? And I think that one of the things that we didn't really talk about in depth was that, you know, I mentioned at the top of the hour, was that a lot of the gang activity and the explosion of gang activity in Central America was fueled in part by our deporting young gang members from America who might have been born in those countries but were raised here and then created the gangs back down in Central America to sizes we can't imagine in this country.
Right. And that's actually accurate, that actually some of the immigration laws that were passed by, you know, for example, Reagan, actually sort of helped to create to this crisis or add to it, actually, because as the caller said, you know, we have a legacy of civil wars in Central America that in many parts were funded by the United States government covertly. So I think all of that needs to be taken into account. But I mean, we obviously can't move backwards, right? That's not gonna help anyone. That's certainly not gonna help all these young children here now. I also want to challenge the idea, though, that anyone who gets to come here sort of gets to stay. I mean, we've had under President Obama more than 2 million people deported. We've had a comprehensive immigration reform bill that passed in the Senate last summer and hasn't moved forward since. But that law, a bipartisan supported law, basically also had a provision that first established the need to quote unquote further secure the border before anyone could adjust their status. I mean, so the idea that border security is not a priority for this administration or for anybody in the United States government is just really a fallacy, because there's billions and billions of dollars constantly being put in to the border. And now we're going to have $2 billion more as per President Obama's speech last week. So I think obviously, you know, the executive action that's going to come next, allegedly, from the Obama administration is going to be critical. In terms of not just what happens to these young people who are in the process of being deported as we speak, but also what's going to happen to the families that are already here in the United States.
Right, and I, you know, I think that I was thinking that earlier today, Luis, about the thousands and thousands of Guatemalan, El Salvadorian, mm-hmm. Honduran families that live here in the community that we're broadcasting from.
Right. You know, Mark, I think there's another thing that when we talk about violence and we talk about the gangs and we talk about the drug cartels, we also need to remember that a lot of these drug cartels, a lot of the tactics that they use are military tactics, and a lot of that is because the U.S. trained these people for the war before, and after the war, those people just become to be unemployed. And, you know, like the U.S. play a huge role in train all of those people to take out a government that was democratically elected by Guatemalan people, and then we ending in a war for 40 years. And then what do you do with all these people once we quote unquote sign the peace agreement? So now our president in Guatemala is a former military, is one of the people, one of the generals that run this war, and that is accused of so many killings, and was supported by the U.S. 100%. So when you see like all these other things, of course we need to really go deep into what is the history behind, and of course it doesn't. It's not just about like pointing fingers to one place or other, but we need to recognize how this situation get here, why Central American countries have so much violence, why there is so much poverty. So if we go back to when Jacobo Arbenz was the president, and the reason why we started why the war started there was because he was attacking this huge corporation that attack people from Guatemala, taking their lands, and the president was giving the land back to people that owned the land before, but the U.S. back up this corporation and started the war and took out our president that was democratically elected. So after that, you can imagine how all these things just build up in violence, and you create a society that is very used to violence, unfortunately, and by training all those people that have been very used to see so much violence, then you don't have an economy to to be part of. You don't have a society to be part of. And then there's a drug dealings. There's a, like all these other things that contribute to get to the situation that we are now.
And I think we haven't gotten enough into this. We'll do another program, though, Megan. I think that one of the things we've read and seen from the PBS special just was broadcast and things I've been reading about are the conditions these kids are living in, who and where they're being kept and how they're being housed and who's running and managing these facilities and the torture and rape that many of these kids faced in their own lives back in their home countries.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we have a huge burgeoning prison industry here in the United States. And tied to that is the industry of immigration detention centers, many which are subcontracted to private companies. So there really isn't the oversight. I mean, there's been an issue of sexual violence against women, against extrajudicious beatings in these detention centers already. So we can only really be concerned about what the conditions are that these children are facing. And also just look at the response that we're also getting from, you know, people who, anti-immigrants, in terms of the amount of xenophobia, jumping in front of buses, accusing these young children of being filled with disease. And my concern is not just for the livelihood and well-being of these children when they're in these detention centers, but also, you know, once they're released, what's going to happen to them? You know, all we have to think about is the case of, you know, 9-year-old Briseña Flores, who was shot to death by anti-immigrant vigilantes. So I'm worried about the volume and the acceleration of the xenophobia that is also happening as a response to these young people being here.
Well, I want to thank you all for being part of this discussion. And we do have to take a break here. And I thank you so much for all of you brought to this conversation. Megan Lamamita Mala Ortiz, always good to have you with us, a freelance journalist based in L.A. Thanks for all the stuff you're doing and your writing. And thank you for taking the time here. And being up, are you on the West Coast now?
I am. I'm in Los Angeles.
So you woke up really early for us. I deeply appreciate that.
Absolutely. Anytime. For you guys, anytime.
Thank you so much. And Luis Arin, leadership organizer for United Workers. Good to have you in the studio. And thank you earlier, Genevieve Wood, for calling and being part of the show from the Heritage Foundation, also calling from the West Coast, and all of you for calling in and writing in. We've got to take a brief break. It's time for Sound Bites, our weekly look at food, agriculture, and the future of our food system. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Friday, July 11th at 7 p.m., 300 men will once again gather to march from the 3400 block of West North Avenue and end at the 2500 block of East North Avenue. Councilman Brandon Scott and community leader Munir Bahar seek men to support this citywide effort to decrease violence in Baltimore neighborhoods and bring their sons, nephews, mentees, male students, and grandsons to include youth on this historic event. For information, 410-262-2996.
If you love real jazz, the place for you is Jazz Straight Ahead. With your host, John Tegler, every Wednesday night from 8 until midnight, right here at 88.9 WEAA, the voice of the community.